I'd like to read to you this morning from the Vision magazine, Swami Ram Dass's article entitled God, the One Refuge. No human being in this world can say that he is not the moments of acute depression, harrowing sense of loss, blankness of despair, and pangs of agony, suspense, and utter grief. In these crucial moments, he has sought a way of escape from the painful condition to which he is subjected. He looks for some hand strong enough to lift him out of his slough of despondency. His aching heart cries for help, but he receives no response from anywhere. His crestfallen spirit sinks lower still. His so-called friends, relations, and fellow men in the world fail him. Who could then save him and grant him peace? Where is hope for him? Then, like a flash, the words of saints and devotees of God rush into his mind. Yes, there is one great hope. There is one great refuge. There is one great Savior, and he is God. God is the friend of the helpless and the shelter of the weak and the suffering. He is the protector and nourisher of the world. He is the most loving parent of all beings and creatures. You do not appeal to him in vain. The instant you turn your face to him and long to be folded in his almighty embrace, that instant he pours on you the soothing light of his infinite grace. Your heavy, laden heart is at once unloaded of its sorrow. Your mind is bathed in the nectar of peace. Your soul, like a bird set free, now sings a song of freedom and joy. You feel intuitively that you have now come under the protection of an all-powerful being. You become conscious that he is ever with you, in you, about you, watching, guiding, and guarding you with the most loving vigilance and care. Such is the experience of many a saint and devotee of the past and the present. Such is the experience of Ram Dass, who writes these lines. Really, there is no safer and surer refuge for a creature than the Supreme Lord of the universe. Remember this Lord, and feel always humble and childlike before him. Offer yourself entirely to him, and enjoy forever and ever the blessings of true peace and freedom. Love him beyond all the things and objects. Hold him as your all in all. He is to be found in your own heart. This is a little article that was written by Kipling, and it describes the ideal state of being. Only the master shall praise us, and only the master shall blame, and no one shall work for money, and no one shall work for fame, but each for the joy of working, and each in his own separate star shall paint the thing as he sees it, for the God of things as they are. I think that is perfectly beautiful. Our Bible reading this morning is from John chapter 12, beginning with verse 23. And Jesus said to them, "The hour is come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. He that loveth his life shall lose it, and he that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal. If any man serve me, let him follow me. And where I am, there shall also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. Now is my soul troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But for this cause came I unto this hour. Father, glorify thy name." Then came there a voice from heaven saying, "I have both glorified it and will glorify it again." The people, therefore, that stood by and heard it, said that it thundered. Others said an angel spake to him. Jesus answered and said, "The voice came not because of me, but for your sakes. Now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out. And I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me. My subject this morning is the stairway to heaven. That stairway to heaven is to be found only within yourselves. In the exoteric teachings for centuries, in all the faces of the world, we find the people engrossed with the outer things. We find them engrossed in various forms of worship. And they use various objects, statues perhaps, incense, they light candles. They have many things on which to concentrate their minds in order that they might, as they think, worship God. These things are wonderful in the beginning. You can go through these exercises, and in fixing your mind upon these things which represent a form of worship to you, you are able to take your minds away from the worldly things and to gradually place them upon God. In the beginning, because of the way we have been taught, we have not been taught to go within and seek God, who is the soul dweller in our beings. We look to all of the outer images. We look to the historical God. We look to the historical Christ, by whatever name he is called, in the various religions of the world. We look everywhere outside of ourselves. We're even taught to look out into the outer heavens for the second coming of the Christ. And yet, he himself said that the kingdom of heaven is within. And therefore, if that be so, as I have mentioned many times, the kingdom of heaven is to be found by man within himself. Where is the second coming of the Christ to manifest itself, except out of the cloud of heaven within your own being, when you are sufficiently purified to receive him? But there is much work to be done. And man, because of his involvement with the senses, would rather spend his time in visiting, in gossiping, in satisfying his desires. He goes out and he buys innumerable things, always to decorate his home, to decorate his own being, to satisfy his desire to do things, to have things, to possess things. And he forgets the tremendous treasure that is waiting for him to explore and to finally find, if he will pick up his cross and follow the Christ. And that cross is his own body. And he will find this stored in the center of his own being. And that treasure that is stored there is so great that it is beyond human words to describe. The Bible starts, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." But God, the absolute, in the absolute firstness, shall we say, of not even being, existed within himself. He was the beyond, the first cause. And we, in our human state of consciousness, think of everything in the relative state, everything in a state of duality. And yet there is nothing but God in this whole universe. He existed before creation, beyond creation. And that is called the first world, if you will, or the first beyond everything. It was a state of existence, and everything was contained within himself, but he did not move. And then he moved, and he brought the Word into existence. He became the deity whom men worship. He became the first cause, and he manifested that cause as light. And then he vibrated forth, and he breathed into that form which he had created. And then life as we know it, started to exist in all forms, this whole universe. It was merely an expression of that which was within himself. But though he was one in that manifested state, within him were all of the separate logos or cells of his one body. And he expressed all of this in various forms. He breathed into every part of this world the life which had lain dormant within himself. But man has created the duality because he has separated himself in his consciousness from God. And so because he thinks of God, then thinks of himself as separate, and then he must go back to God, he creates duality, whereas everything there is only an expression of that one. Now there are four worlds, and the first world is the spiritual world. And that is the world of divine ideas. And then you have, and that is called the first cause, or the that which becomes the body, so to speak. And the intelligence goes into that causal body and manifests forth as consciousness, as intelligence. And then, as he expressed himself further into the world, he created a psychic body. And that a psychic body has form the same as this outer form of the whole universe and of ourselves individually. It can think, it can see, it can hear, it can smell, and so on, just as the physical body can. And then it projected forth and it became the gross body. So we have these bodies manifested in this world in all of creation. But then there is said to be a fourth body. And in Christian terminology, we call it hell or Hades. And that body comes into manifestation only after death. And it comes into manifestation only from those souls that have kept themselves in the lower states of consciousness, who have overindulged in sex, who have gone in for the lustful things of the world, for murder, for rape, for all of the things that will be destructive. And then man wonders why he cannot indulge in these things. And he is kept in a separate prison house, or as we say, hell, because of the terrible torture that he himself has brought upon himself through indulgence in the things of the flesh and in all of these things that are against the laws of God. He cries out in torment. He cries out in torment. Now the brain is the higher part of your body. And that controls and governs the mind and the higher etheric breath. And the heart center controls the lower breath, the digestive organs, the lower part of the higher spiritual, shall we say. And then we have the navel, which has to do with the creative force in the universe. And then, of course, the coccygeal center, which has to do more with lust and with sex. All of these things are there. And the world itself is divided into seven hierarchies. And we are the miniature part of that outer world, and we are complete in the microcosmic sense, just as complete as that outer universe. And we have all of that universe within ourselves. There are seven steps in the outer universe, and there are seven steps in our bodies, in our inner universe. And these seven steps are the seven spinal centers. Now, coiled at the base of the universe as we know it, and that universe contains all of everything there is, all of the hierarchies, all of the stellar systems, everything there is a coiled electrical force, or a serpent force, which goes out in the universal sense and furnishes light and energy and intelligence to all of the worlds. And in each man is that same serpent force which is spoken of in the Bible, which is coiled at the base of the spine. And the Hindus call it the Kundalini force. In the beginning, when man's animal nature is predominant within him, he indulges, as I have said, in all of the things of the senses. He is not interested in God. He is not interested in spiritual things. He is interested in the gross things of the world, and he expresses himself, perhaps in dirty words. And we hear much of this going on today, these four-letter words. We see people groveling in the sexual aspect of humanity. Everything that is gross, we see it coming into manifestation. And he thinks that this is the in thing to do. And it is not. There is nothing wrong in being refined. There is nothing wrong in the beauty that is all around us and that we can express from within ourselves and create that beauty in our own inner world. Don't forget that it says here, and it's the last verse in this that I read you, "And I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me." The Christ is the intelligence. He is the life, the energy, the power, the everything in you, in every single man. But he is born the Son of Man in the human state of consciousness, which in the beginning is the animal state of man. And that animal state must be transformed. And then he becomes a higher type of man, a human ego, one that one can be proud to know. But that is still in the human state. And that Son of Man, that spiritual part, which is called the Son of Man, must be lifted up. It must be transformed before it can become the Christed One, the Son of God. And in order to do that, you have to take definite steps. There is a story of a man who went to a great sage, and he asked him to teach him. And he said, "All right, I will give you something to do." He said, "Take that lamp over there and light it." The man tried and tried again to light the lamp, but the lamp would not light. The wick would not burn. And the reason was that it was because it was filled with water. So he said, "I cannot do it." The sage said to him, "Of course you cannot do it." He said, "Now empty the lamp." And he said, "Put in place of the water, oil." He said, "Take the wick and squeeze the water out of it and then light it, and you will find that the lamp will burn." And so the man did this, each one of these things. And he lit the lamp, and the lamp burned. Now the water designates your desire for worldly things. And as long as you have the desire for worldly things within yourself, your lamp cannot be lit with the Spirit of God. And so the wick that had to have the water squeezed out of it denotes renunciation of worldly things. What does this renunciation mean? Does it mean that you have to give up all of the things which you have been used to enjoying all of your lives? Does it mean you have to give up your clothes, your possessions, your houses, your family, all of these things? No. It means you have to give up your attachment to them. And until you are willing to give up that attachment and not be possessed by them, you cannot make any spiritual progress. But when you do, you can be in the world, live in it, enjoy it to the utmost, and yet not be of it. And when you reach that point where you are willing to dedicate every part of your life, your being, your possessions, all of those that you call dear to God, to let go and let God, then and then alone will this great light manifest itself within your being. And you will find that in giving up everything that you held dear, that you gave up nothing except that which was your own in the beginning and which will remain your own forevermore, to use but not to abuse, that you have attained freedom and not bondage, that you have become the son, the daughter of the free woman, and you have been released from the bondswoman, that of the human within yourself, which kept you in captivity. And as the light burns, then, it brings on the third quality, which is wisdom. All of these things the Master taught. This, he said, that is all you need. Now go forth and live, and you will find that you are God. What a wonderful story, and it is true. We are God in human form. The Christ that we have worshipped for 2,000 years as existing in only one body is that universal Christ consciousness, energy, power, beauty, glory, everything, peace, that first emanated from the deity which we call God. And when he first manifested himself, he became God the Father, or Spirit, and he projected himself into the womb of the nature which he has created and brought forth a form. And that was the Word which took on the form of flesh in the whole universe, not just in one man. But from time to time, down through the ages, when the world is full of sin, of darkness, of corruption, and men's minds and hearts are without any thought, any feeling of God, then God sends what is called an incarnation, or an avatar, as the Hindus express it. One who is a direct descent from God himself to bring forth the light of truth into the world and to change the consciousness of men and to complete the cycle which has gone out from himself to the very bottom of darkness and bring it back into the light of consciousness, understanding, brilliance, where men may not even need to create in the way that they do outwardly now, but that they can create with thought. They can create forms. They can impregnate into the wombs of all creation, the womb of all creation, that which they want to see manifested. And I have told you before, I'm sitting at the feet of this great master, Maharaj Swami Ashokananda, and having him tell me that in the olden days, the stories came or handed down in India, of men who had truly manifested themselves as being one with God. And it was not necessary for them to have a physical union with a woman in order to create a child, but rather they would think a thought and the pregnancy took place. They would reach over and touch her on the forehead or on the breast, and the woman would be impregnated and would bring forth a wonderful spiritual child. Now, to people who are bound in the senses, who see nothing wrong in constantly indulging in things of the physical nature, this is an absolutely abhorrent idea. And they think of what they give up in the way of sensation. But I would like to mention to these people that what they are depriving themselves of in the way of the feeling of the bliss of God is so much greater in every sense of the word, that there is absolutely no words in the human sense that can be used to describe the difference. Because when you are truly lifted up, when you have actually picked up your cross, which is your body, and you have followed the Christ, which means to emulate him in every detail, to climb your ladder to heaven, the stairway to heaven within yourself through the seven spinal centers, as this kundalini force rises and it hits every center, it experiences that which goes on in that particular world within yourself. And it becomes a part of that. It tastes it, so to speak. And then it rises above it and goes to the next one. And it unfolds another world within yourself. And this all happens within, not without. You are dimly conscious of the outer world, but you are engrossed in that experience which God himself has catapulted you into, because he knows that finally your mind has turned to him. Your heart has opened up to receive only his love, that you are sick of all of this duality and what you put yourselves through. And believe me, we put ourselves through it. Nobody does it to us. But there's one saving grace, that no matter what you have done, that God is ready to forgive us. Each and every one of us. He forgives us. And whatever we have done in the past, and it is said that it takes a million years for man's consciousness to evolve from the time he went out from God until he returns totally to the bosom of God. You go through many lives, many experiences, and finally reach that state of oneness or perfection. And so it happens within yourself that you go through these seven worlds or seven spinal centers until finally you escape from the body, the object that you were manifesting in, and you become that which you were before creation. And that is called the death state, which Jesus the Christ is said to have experienced. And these avatars, these Christs, and they are called by different names only because the people speak a different language, but they are speaking of the same one Father God. The same one, Christ consciousness, power, intelligence, joy, beauty, everything. They speak of that same one in their own language. And because of our ignorance, we think that these people who speak the name of God and of Christ in their own language, in their own words, are heathens. And it is not so. It is not so. We are all God's children. We are all a part of Him, all a part of creation. And man should not distinguish between men because of color, because of creed, because of caste, because all are the separate cells of His one body. And when our consciousness is lifted up, we are filled with the bliss of His infinite presence. We have gone through all of these worlds. We have conquered them. We have become the great adventurer. We have gone on the great adventure of exploring what is within our own private microcosmic universe. And we have risen above it. You don't do that by paying attention to Mr. In-Between, of becoming involved in visions of astral travel, of levitation, of all of the things that man is so entranced with today, of psychic readings, of regressions into former incarnations. Don't forget that whenever you go to a regressionist and that regression is successful, you bring into your present state of consciousness and awareness that which you were before and that which you have paid the price for or haven't paid the price for, and which God in His mercy has let lie dormant because He doesn't want you to have to deal with it. Because how do you know what you were? How do you know what you did? You can't all be William the Conquerors or all be Cleopatras, for goodness sakes. You know, and how many of them do we find around that these couch readers tell about? And what does it do? It enhances the human ego. Oh, I was a great king. I was a great pharaoh. I was a great this or that or the other thing. Or I was a great saint. What difference does it make what you were? Whatever you were has become a part of what you are in your consciousness this very moment. And what you think, say, and do this moment determines what all of your future, all of your tomorrows will be. And I clue you that if you want them to be good, then you better think positive thoughts. You better change your consciousness and your way of doing things and your life and your attachments to the things of the outside world. You can enjoy them, but don't be attached to them. Because every time you put forth an attachment to something or somebody, you give a part of yourself to that. And in order to reach the millennium, in order to reach the highest of that which you are capable of reaching within yourself, you have to draw all of the pieces of yourself back together and take it inside and lift it up. Now, we worship Jesus the Christ in the Orthodox sense as being the only begotten, the only manifested Son of God. And he came in a human body. And that he was great, there can be no doubt. He was the ultimate in the expression of divinity in man. But so was Krishna. So was the Buddha. So, it is said, was Confucius. And certainly there are millions of people today who worship Mohammed, Zoroaster. That down through the ages, these great ones have come. And what difference by what name we call them? It is God made manifest. And God is not so limited, so curtailed, that he can make only one. The only one that he made, and he did make that one, was the universal Christ. That one who first expressed himself from the bosom of God, who became the carpenter of the universe, and then lodged in every atom of creation which had expressed itself as being a part of God. You have this whole world to explore within yourselves. All of the life forms, and don't forget that you have created a universe within yourself. Within yourself. Don't forget that Jesus says here, if any man serve me, let him follow me. And where I am, there shall also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. You can become an heir with Christ. You can become equal to Christ. And yet, if you make that statement to an Orthodox religionist, they will look at you in horror and think you are an angel of Satan. And yet, if they would only read what it says in here, I myself am nothing, said the Christ. I myself am nothing. It is my Father who doeth the works. And he who has seen me has seen the Father, because the Father expresses in me his Son, but he expresses in you his Son, his daughter, in everything that there is. Let us universalize our minds and not limit the Christ. Let us see him spread all over space. Let us envision this great light, this great beauty, this great power, and emulate that. Make ourselves into that. Climb the spinal stairway to the heaven within your own being, and then transcend even that into the so-called death state. And then when you return, you will become a lamp to light the way for many. This must come to every man at some time. Another couple of verses out of the Bible, John chapter 3, beginning with verse 14. And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up. Now Moses represents the law in the parable or an allegoric form. Moses received the Ten Commandments, which are called by different names, but yes, which are the Ten Commandments in every great religion of the world. And the law then finally went into operation, and it lifted up this kundalini force, or this serpent force, which is an electrical force coiled at the base of every man's spine, in the wilderness. And we are a wilderness, believe me. And there are the wild animals of our desires roaming this wilderness. And it is through this that the Son of Man must go. And don't forget that the more you indulge in the things of the senses, the more you are going to have to endure and go through what you have caused yourself when the time comes when God knows you're ready. And he is the only one that knows, because he is within you. And he knows when your heart is with him, when every part of your being longs, reaches out, aches for union with him, and you cry for him. You're willing to give up everything and even to die for him. And isn't it an amazing thing that the Orthodox Christians say, have you accepted Christ as your personal Savior? And if you say yes, then you go into this euphoric state and you are supposed to be saved. Saved from what? Saved from what? You have not made any effort, and yet it says in the Bible that salvation is the pearl of great price, and it must be paid, not vicariously by one man, the Christ who lived 2,000 years ago, but by the Christ within you, the Savior within you. Because that is the spiritual part of the human, the Savior, the Son of Man. And that one must be lifted up into divine consciousness until he becomes the Christed one, the Son of God. Then from chapter 8, verse 28, when you have lifted up the Son of Man, then shall ye know that I am He. And get this, and I do nothing myself, but as my Father hath taught me, I speak these things, and He that sent me is with me. The Father hath not left me alone, for I do always those things which please Him. When you come to the point where you are ready to please God alone and not yourself, you will have arrived at the beginning of climbing your ladder, your stairway, your spiritual stairway into the heaven within your own being. You have such a beautiful world. You have all gifts there. You have wisdom. You have power. You have bliss. You have joy. You have beauty. You have light. You have peace all waiting for you. If you will but let go of the things of the senses and reach out for the things of the Spirit. Eat of the meat of the Spirit. Drink of the wine of the Spirit. And don't be satisfied with anything less until you reach your goal, which is the millennium, and which is the destiny of every single man, and which is the only purpose for which He came. He's not put here to satisfy His senses. He is put here with senses, truth. And they must be used, because in order to exist, we have to think, see, hear, smell, taste, feel. And all that we experience then is related to the brain and becomes a part of our conscious mind and our memory storehouse. And even if we don't consciously remember it, it's in there because we have put it there. It's like making a phonograph record, and the needle keeps on going and winding and winding and winding until you dissolve into light. And there is no needle. There is no record. There is no music. There is no sound. There is the stillness. Be still and know that I am God, says in the 46th Psalm. Be still. So time should be spent in meditation, in communion with God within yourself. That should be the first thought in your mind each day and the last in the evening. It should permeate every moment of your consciousness throughout the day. And you must know that whatever you do, that of yourself you can do nothing, even as Christ said. But that it is your Father who doeth the works. He feeds you the ideas. He feeds you the strength. He feeds you the will, the power to bring into manifestation everything that comes from you. And in truth, you of yourself are nothing. Neither am I. It is my Father who doeth the works. You think I can stand up here and speak to you? Who have never graduated from a school in my life in the way that I do. The school of life that I have graduated from is the universe and the school of spirit. And I paid the full price. And these people who look at me askance and think I'm an angel of Satan because I don't believe just the way they do, I do believe in the Christ with all my heart, my mind, my soul, to the extent that I gave my own personal life to Him to do with as He will. I went through the state of death. I returned. I went through all of the experiences that are described in parables here so that I could return and tell you the truth. Whether you believe it or not is your option. But I do tell you the truth. And that is real love for Christ. If you asked the so-called Christian who says that he is absolutely a dedicated Christian, would you be willing to die for Christ? Which is what is meant when you pick up your cross and follow Him. Would you die for Him? You wouldn't have very many takers. My love for Him was so great that I did. And yet some call me an angel of Satan because I don't believe the way they do. I can understand their point of view. It is their present state of consciousness. God is there because He's everywhere equally present. I give them that right because they are where they are supposed to be, where God has placed them. And I do not blame them because they cannot understand where I am, where I have been, where I have come from. But I want this for each and every one of you, because you see, what is there to fear? Having gone through all of that, still I stand before you. And the power that comes from me, the words that come from me, come not from myself, but from Him who sent me, just as He sent you. And you have and can become anything that you see in me, and greater. Remember, Jesus said, all of these works that I do, ye may do also. And even greater works than these that I do, ye may do. And I say the same things to you. Many of you say to me in private conversations, oh, but look what you are. How do you think I got that way? Somebody said the same thing to my own spiritual teacher one time. But Master, you know, look what you are. He says, yes, but how do you think I got that way? He got that way by putting God before himself, by giving up his own lust, his own desires, and thinking about God alone, acting for God alone, in your jobs, in whatever you do, in your housework, in taking care of your children, in whatever work that you are involved in at the moment. Know that God is doing it through the form which he created, he alone. And that you have the blessed privilege of being the witness to that which the Father does in you. With everything that you do, do for him, not for your little self. And the joy and the peace and the bliss and the power which will come to you is beyond my power to describe to you in human words. Because bliss is a thing that must be felt. And do not mistake the rapture or the ecstasy, which is the highest state of human development and which the exoteric Christian reaches out for when he thinks that the graves are going to open up and that all of these people are going to come forth when the second coming of the Christ comes. Don't concentrate on that rapture, but go through it, pass it, and go through what is necessary, what God puts you through, in order to attain the ultimate, the bliss, and the everlasting oneness, peace, glory, of knowing that you are one with God in human form. Reach out for it. Climb your ladder. Climb the 7 steps. And approach it with joy. Approach it with tears if you wish. But approach it. Because you do not know what you are depriving yourself of. I work hard. The body becomes so-called ill at times, and yet, amazingly enough, every blessed time almost, maybe once in a while there's a slight exception, nothing is wrong with this body. Recently I had a physical. My heart had been kicking up, and yet the results came out that it was better than it was the last time. Now, how do you account for that? It is because God gives me certain things to work out in my body for all of those who follow with me. It isn't something that I take on myself. He gives it to me, and I accept it willingly. And when you see me this way, don't think, well, she should be perfect, that I am what my Father makes me. Because I am totally surrendered to him. This body I gave up long years ago to his service. I gave it to him. I asked him to take it and use it as he will. And nobody took my free will away from me. It is my will to do only the will of my Father. And he may use every last shred of me, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, to do his work, to try to help those who are still suffering and in darkness. This is what I want. This is what I dedicate myself to. And you will see that if each one of you will pick up your cross and follow the Christ and dedicate yourself to him with all of your heart, your mind, and your soul, you will know what I mean. You will find the joy of giving. You will find the joy even of suffering for not yourself anymore because you paid the full price, but for others. In order that we may have a new world, a new life, a new everything where there is peace, not only on earth, but in the earth of your own being. And so that you can live suspended between the earth and the heaven, the human and the divine, and not give up anything of either, but have the best, the peace, the wonder, the beauty, the glory of all, because it is one world, and that world is God. I'd like to close by briefly reading you something which I think is entrancing. It's entitled The Purple Dream, and this was written way back in 1934 by a man who was with my guru. His name was James M. Warnick. Once in a saffron twilight, a purple dream went searching for a soul to whom she might offer her friendship. And she saw a rich man in his counting house, and the man pleased her, and she hovered about him with joy in her eyes. But when he left the mark for his home, he took no wealth of thought nor gold of sympathy with him. And the dream deserted him, for she saw that the shining treasure that his hands caressed was a symbol not of goodness but of greed. And the dream flew away to seek for one more worthy of her beauty. And she found a man that she thought she could love, for she watched him as he passed through the doors of a temple, whispering holy words from sacred books. But as he knelt at the altar, a shadow passed between him and the dream, and entering the heart of the man of prayer, made murky all the red rivers in his veins. And the dream passed on, for she could not dwell within a darkened mind. A man of learning next she found, and thought to find a home within his heart. But soon she saw that he was one whose knowledge of appearances had made him blind to the glories of the unseen. On and on flew the dream, hoping ere the night should fall to find one spirit that would recognize and welcome her. Yet no one seemed to know her nor to want her, and she saw no one who made her heart rejoice. The purple dream folded her rainbow-tinted wings for a brief rest before her contemplated return to the mother of dreams beyond the veil of time. Sitting alone beneath a magnolia tree, she suddenly beheld a little girl not far away. And the child was weeping because her doll had fallen to the ground and its tiny arms were broken. Gathering the doll in her arms, the little girl started homeward, pressing her baby to her breast and crying as though her heart would break. And the purple dream took the star-bordered mantle of evening and wiped the tears from the eyes of the child. And she followed the little one home and lay by her side all the night. And the child awoke with a smile in the morning, for the dream had found her own. Isn't that beautiful? You know, the world needs each and every one of us. The world is what we make it. The world is what we think it to be. So let us see it filled with the beauty, the wonder, the light of God. Let us think only positive thoughts and bring into the manifestation within our own lives the greatest dream of all, our union with God. And when you have that union, you are one with every single man, woman, and child, every part of creation in all of this world and beyond. Who would not want such a thing? And you wake up one morning and realize that all is yourself. That I am that I am.